Welcome to the podcast Benzo Tired. I'm your host, Neftel Benesty, and I'm Dutch. Join me on my journey into the world of benzodiazepines, withdrawal, bind, and more. Disclaimer, always consult your physician for medical advice. This is episode 37, Working with Bind, and today it's April 2nd, 2024. This episode is dedicated to Dr. Christy Huff. I'm heartbroken by her loss. Christy was an unmatched advocate for the BenzoHarm community. BenzoTired was graced to have her on the show twice, and I got to know Christy personally as a kind and loving person. Christy will be missed, and may she rest in peace. If you would like to leave a message or pay tribute in any way, visit the website of BIC, benzoinfo.com. In this episode, I have an informal conversation about working with Bind with my friends Emma Saunders and Emma Hames. Hope you enjoy. Thank you, lovelies, for coming on Benzo Tired yet again.
Thank you.
Welcome. We are talking about working during Bind, which stands for benzodiazepine-induced neurological dysfunction. I'm going to start off with Emma Saunders. So you are currently tapering several drugs. Mm-hmm. And my first question would be, what were you doing before you got poisoned?
Before I got poisoned, I was a working actor and photographer. And I did a little bit of voiceover and a little bit of like illustration. So it's just like a big melting pot of creation. But all of the things, obviously, it took me quite a few years to get there, but all of the things were actually flowing pre-pandemic. Obviously the pandemic kind of wiped everything out in that respect, but yeah, that's what I was doing.
Right. And currently, what are you doing currently?
So this is my fourth year into this drug harm. So fourth year, I'm actually managing to work, well, as and when, like kind of risking it a little bit because I'm still tapering. So for example, over Christmas and New Year, I was like bed bound for like 6 weeks, couldn't move. So if I had a job come in then, it would have been 100% no. But I had a job come in like 2 weeks ago and I'm okay. But also there's still always that risk of like doing too much, overstimulation. Yeah. So I'm kind of working as and when I can. Risking it a little bit.
Right. Emma Haynes, I mean, I already know, but could you share with the audience what you were doing before you got poisoned?
Yeah, sure. I was working officially as a teacher. So I was working in the south of France. I was teaching at this school of architecture in Montpellier, and I had a few other jobs working as sort of out of hours after school nursery for young children in Montpellier, and also doing some work with a private enterprise teaching French adults how to kind of prepare for the professional world in English, essentially. Love those jobs. And then I was also doing, running my own band at the time, doing gigs, songwriting performances, and yeah, working part-time, like Emma, like very sort of very much juggling a lot of creative things. So sort of part-time doing paintings as well. And yeah, that was it.
And currently, what are you currently doing?
I am currently working on a documentary film, feature length film, and conjoined with that is sort of songwriting for the soundtrack, which is part of the story itself. So back to doing music, but in more of a sort of official capacity with the filmmaking.
Right. So in terms of Bind or just drug harm, Emma Hames, you've been off the drugs for quite some time now. What do you notice in terms of limitations compared to your former non-harmed drug self with work?
Ooh, that's a really big question because there are just so many differences. It's really hard to know where to start, as you both know.
Yeah.
I think for me, like if I had to sum it up, not that you've asked me to sum it up, but to begin with a summary of it, I would say it's just the complete unknownness. Like Emma was saying, you don't know how you're going to feel day to day, week to week, month to month. You just have no idea. So that makes it really difficult to be able to make plans, make commitments, not just with work, but, you know, life in general. And I think it's exhausting as well. It's just very disorientating not knowing what your brain, central nervous system, and therefore body is going to be like, even hour to hour, a lot of the time. So for me, it's that sense of, and I don't want to sound too bleak about it, because I do believe we will all heal. And I do believe the brain is a very powerful thing, but it's the sense of out of controlness that I think is the biggest thing. Like, I always felt very self-reliant, and no matter what happened or what struggles were going on at the time before all this happened, that I could just, you know, go to a coffee shop, take my blank piece of paper and a pen and kind of figure it out and say, okay, I've got, I don't know, picked up a virus. I'm just going to rest for this amount of time. I'll get these supplements. I'll eat these foods, etc. But with this, it kind of takes away your, what's the word? Self-sovereignty, I guess, to a large degree, and knowing how to manage that. So yeah, for me, that's the biggest change.
How about you, MIS?
What, could you repeat the question?
Sure, sure. So before, what's the difference with you working now as before you were harmed by drugs?
Okay, yes. So very much what Emma was just saying in terms of not knowing when I'm going to be okay. For example, the job I just did, it was kind of terrifying to, I had to fly to the job and it was long days. And in the evenings, I would start to get symptoms. At the moment, I'm tapering quetiapine, so I'm on the last bits of that. And that can be a very sensitive time for a lot of people when they're on those last bits. And so ideally, I shouldn't really be doing anything, but obviously I need to survive. So I'm there, and in the night, before I take the pill, I get these really weird, like, joltings and weird surges of terror. Just, I think, from the stimulation. And so there's part of me that's thinking like, oh my God, am I going to have a setback? Like, am I going to be able to do the next day of work? It's just really awful. And yeah, exactly what Emma was saying, just really disorientating, always having to plan. Like, I'm like, okay, once I'm off the quetiapine, I can't work at all. Like, if a job comes in, I'm going to have to say no to it. And I'm going to have to give myself that time until I feel like my body can deal with anything afterwards. And then I've got two more medications to come off and do that same, that whole thing with. So yeah, it's exhausting. And I think also before this, I had these plans of my life, like anything's possible sort of thing. Whereas now it's like,
right,
I'm just going to have to gauge how this is going to go from literally like one moment to the next.
Right. Well, from personal experience, I can tell you that before I got poisoned, I had a lot of ambitions. I wanted to go back to school and do all these things. And I was like, you know, everything is possible, you know, because I was healthy. And you know, now we, like you both said, like, we don't know what tomorrow brings or next year brings. So I'm like, I cannot commit to these things right now. And secondly, what I've noticed personally by going back to work was that the many stimuli that was going on at my job, I would dream about that. Like, I would, my sleep would be affected from that. So, and I would have days where I was cognitively declined. I would forget names and things. And then the next day I'd be perfectly fine and perfectly able to manage quite a complicated job, but then I would sleep shitty again. So there's always a cost, you know? And I just, for me, the biggest difference is the lack of energy. I used to be so energetic. I could work from 9 to 5 or longer and be fine. And now I'm like, I'm exhausted in 3 hours. So it's the energy level and just a cognitive decline. I used to, you know, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I was pretty smart before all this. And I'm like, I feel kind of dumb. I used to be able to like remember this these things, and now I can't or limit it. So I'm not really sure if you have the same thing with the cognition. Emma Haynes?
Yes. Yeah. I think the short answer is yes. And I get it. It can just, this for me is kind of, obviously the physical symptoms are horrific and we all know that. And it's, it does amount to a kind of torture for anyone who's not aware of what benzo induced neurological dysfunction can do. But it is the cognitive stuff that kind of permeates on a real soul level, because you feel like it's chipped away at you to some degree. Because like you say, we all have this sense of identity growing up and what we're capable of doing and therefore the possibilities with our lives. And then when you agency, that's the word I was looking for, when you feel like you've lost a certain agency, albeit temporary, none of us know how temporary, it can feel, it's like going through a grief process, but every day, because every day you're reminded of it. And I definitely get the cog fog, the cognitive fog that you, I think it was described in one of the opening scenes in Medicating Normal, actually, where one of the participants was saying that he just would look at a screen and there was just like a wall that would come up with like analyzing the data. I mean, my background is in, I did a degree in science and then I did a postgrad in teaching. I honestly would have no idea how I'd be able to do with both those degrees now. And technically I'm, you know, 15 years older, wiser. In theory, I should be far more able to do those things and do them 10 times better. But yeah, there can be that wall. And like you say, it can go from one day feeling like that was a pretty good day. I felt like I showed up to a conversation or a meeting and was kind of myself. And the next day you're just like, it's so abstract. How do you describe that to people? It's really difficult.
How about you, MIS, in terms of cognition and your job? Because I would reckon that you would maybe have to learn lines or things. And how does that go?
Yeah, no, definitely. Like even a minute ago when I was like, can you repeat the question? Because like my brain, even like minute by minute, will be just not the same as it was. Mm-hmm. And like my attention span and things like that, it's very different. I almost feel like I'm in a dream, especially when I'm tapering. It can really go really bad to the point where I'm like, shit, like I haven't got any of anything done. And like, it's 6 p.m. What have I been doing?
Right.
Yeah. And yeah. Do you remember that time we had an interview with Mark Horowitz and I'd completely forgotten. And then I actually answered and I was in the Sainsbury's car park.
Yes. I mean, it was funny. It's funny. And it's interesting that you would say that because I started BenzoTired on a whim and it just became what it became. But I've had a few interviews that I had scheduled and I was not okay on some of these days. And obviously you can't see me. I'll give you one example. I had this writer on the show, also from the UK, Miranda Levi, who wrote The Insomnia Diaries. And I slept like 3 or 4 hours. And there were some noises going on in my area. And I was like, okay, but before and after, it was a mess. Like my questions weren't like chronological and I was trying to save this interview, but you know, that stuff happens. Like, you know, like, what was my purpose again? What did I really wanted to ask? And sometimes it, you know, works like that. So yeah, I totally agree with that. I'll tell you something funny because I went applying for jobs. And in such a state, actually, I was like, what? I'm going back to work? That's so surreal. So I was really sitting there, like it had been 4 or 5 years, like that I had worked or applied or anything. And there was this one lady who was like, hey, I'm noticing that you have a 2-year gap on your resume. Could you care to elaborate? And I was like, I had an allergic reaction to a medication. I was like, how do I convey? Oh, I died. I went to hell, came back, died again. You know, I should be dead, but here I am. You know, it's like, I don't even do that conversation. So when you kind of go back into the quote unquote regular world and people don't know about this and it's so difficult to explain, what I wonder what it was like for you both to get into quote unquote normal world again, like you're just consistently tapering or you're really sick. So all you're trying to do is survive. And then you kind of like gradually go back into the quote unquote workforce or you see regular people again. What was it like for you, Emma Saunders?
My God. Well, it was bizarre because my story, obviously, I stabilized within 30 minutes from a very, very, very severe state. I mean, I had akathisia. I was in another reality. I couldn't have counted how many symptoms I had, maybe thousands. And I stabilized in half an hour back to just me. So then from that point onwards, I just kind of, it was one foot in front of the other. And I've done things that I shouldn't have done in that, because I've just not really known how do you govern that? Like, oh my God, am I going to fall back into withdrawal any second? Then you start tapering, and oh my God, the whole thing, trying to find a psychiatrist to give me the medication, let alone then the jobs that come up. Like, I remember going and doing a photography job because I thought, well, I'm photographing one person, it was a headshot, I'll be able to do it. And I'm there literally kind of having these kind of stroke-like symptoms and just like holding my camera being like, yeah, I'm fine. It's just kind of, I mean, that's the reality of it. You're just sort of in situations sometimes where you're like, I really shouldn't be here with the way I'm feeling, but I am.
Totally, 100%. How about you, Emma Haynes?
Sorry, terrible. So
Sometimes you
terrible.
just gotta laugh, haven't you? Like, I know.
Yes. It's a good thing that we can. It's a good thing that we can.
Oh my gosh, just the way that you describe that. Oh God, it's just like the darkest but most realist funny humor because yeah, like we've all been in that position where it's just like I can't fucking move properly, but it is just the way you said it, which is beautiful.
I had this
I
moment where I
don't know how
was
to follow
changing a
that.
diaper and I was like, did I really survive hell to come back to this? And for me, what was kind of triggering as well, because I'm working with people with special needs, I was like, I felt like y'all, I felt like I was mentally so declined. I couldn't formulate sentences. It was kind of triggering for me. But Emma Haynes, what about you and going back into reality, I guess?
Oh man, it's just such a surreal experience. I mean, I've got like a whole book collection of analogies that I use because it's my only way, only resource I think I have to try and describe this. I mean, this is partly why I'm doing the film because I want to visually convey this as best as I can. I think film is such a great way to kind of take something abstract and communicate it. But yeah, I for me it felt like the minute that the actual injury hit, it had felt like somebody had kidnapped me on from Earth, driven me. It's not the right term to get from one planet to another, I don't know. But taking me to another planet that was reminiscent of Earth and just kind of left me there. And then genuinely, it has felt like being transported back. You just kind of arrive and you're like, hi, everyone. I don't know how to even begin what's just to describe what's just happened. And you don't, like you say, you can easily just find yourself not saying anything or, at times I've tried and I've said, oh, I was injured or harmed by medication. And some people are incredibly empathetic and they want to know more. Some people are just like, not interested. And some people go, oh, did you not read the side effects in the leaflet? And you're just like, this is also why I wanted to do the film because frankly, I just don't want to go the rest of my fucking life having to try and explain this and having to try and navigate who I can share that with, which employer I share that with. I just kind of want to be like, this here's the story, here's the truth of what's happened, here's what's happening to loads of people. And if people connect with that, then they're your people, right? They're the people that you surround yourself with. And I think that's the approach that I've taken. For me, one of the most surreal experiences was just going into a supermarket for the first time in like half a decade. Because I couldn't, the supermarket for me was the number two scary thing to achieve. And I remember doing it like for the first time, I was by myself and these bright lights. And it was like coming out of prison. Or, again, another analogy, like having been kidnapped for 5 years and then you're suddenly released. And you're just like the person just drops you off, and then there's a Sainsbury's there. This episode is not sponsored by Sainsbury's, but there's a Sainsbury's there, and you walk in, and everyone's just going about their normal day, and you're just there having this profound experience, but it's like another layer of the isolation because you can't really share that with people that well.
Totally, totally. And in terms of, because as you know, there's like so much unsure about our futures, right? Because we've been harmed and, you know, Emma and I are still, you know, on the drugs, trying to come off it. Emma Haynes, you're off the drug, but you don't know how much recovery will still take place. How has it changed your future plans in terms of career after the benzo injury? And I'm going to start with you, Emma Saunders.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I think when I first stabilized, I thought, like what Emma was just saying, I mean, it's just very surreal because you're like, oh, I'm back. And I've been on another planet for ages and I'm back now. But it also felt like a second chance at life because I genuinely felt like I died and gone to like a parallel universe. In fact, that was part of my psychosis. I thought that I was in hell and I was Hitler and all sorts of things. So it was really, really, I mean, at first I was just happy to not be Hitler and not be in a parallel universe and to actually have come back. So in terms of prospects for work, for me, it's been very slow these last 4 years. It's like, you know, I'm kind of like, am I going to make it past a month? Am I going to make it past, you know, so it's changed as time has gone on. And I just, first of all, it was literally, I couldn't even think about that far ahead. And I didn't have those kind of thoughts. It was just one foot in front of the other. But now in my fourth year, I'm now starting to think, oh, I'm going to record an album and I'm going to do all the things that I wanted to do before. And in fact, I want to do them even more now because I'm like, this is a second chance at life. Like I could be dead. Mm-hmm. And actually I've got to do these things now because if I don't, then what the fuck? and also like Emma, I'm making a documentary about all of this as well, which has been incredibly therapeutic as well. So there's, I've had a lot of that, like I made a song and, you know, now I have a different Instagram page because I feel like to get through this, I think, especially if you're creative, it's so important to create and from the experience. And well, like we are all very passionate. It's just creating awareness about this because I can't go on without not saying anything, especially as I'm still going through it now. And it's like, I just want to be like, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
To the people who did this, you know?
Yes. Yes.
Maybe that should be our protest. We just get those giant hands with the middle fingers and we just march through London.
Yeah. How about you, Emma Haynes, in terms of future prospects and career?
Yeah, I mean, similar to Emma, really. I remember the first few years, at least, it was just like, am I going to survive tomorrow? Am I going to be here tomorrow? Will this ambulance be the one that I don't come back out of? So I think it took a while to get to a place where I could, yeah, almost have enough, dare you say it, like luxury from the symptoms to be able to have that headspace to consider these big life questions. And like Emma said as well, you sort of do realize that you have a new lease of life. It's kind of like you've already paid the price of feeling like you've gone through a simulated dying experience. You might as well try and live life now. Like as soon as you get a bit of leeway to start doing things, you want to take that and run with it because you've kind of lived out this horrific experience. And one of the weird silver linings is that you probably do develop a certain resilience in a different way of looking at things. Where you're like, you've lived out one of your worst fears that anybody could live out. Therefore, going after your dreams or changing career directions doesn't feel as scary as it might have done in, you know, before that. So for me, it was definitely a kind of light at the end of the tunnel, dare I say it, of what do I want to do? What is my pinnacle life that I want to create? What is the thing that I want to spend time, precious time? You appreciate time so much more. Like I don't want to just do something that's safe for the next 5-10 years because I don't none of us know. When you go through something that extreme, you also realize how fragile life is. And there is a certain privilege in I know it's a really weird thing to say, but there's a weird privilege in seeing under the hood of life and seeing it like that is you do see the reality. And it makes you just want to go for things. So saying all that to come back around to the fact that I realized that I didn't want to be a teacher anymore. For me, it was always, I'm really proud of the work that I did. And I love some of my jobs, but it was always a kind of, it didn't feel like the complete, you know, here's what I bring to the table. Here's my life's purpose, I guess. I think it was part of the journey, but not kind of the end destination, so to speak. And I also realized I don't think I can ever, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, I don't think I could ever work for somebody else again in a full-time capacity or even a part-time capacity, maybe ad hoc work. But I do feel like I may have some sensitivities for the rest of my life because I cold turkeyed, and obviously 8 years out now and I'm still dealing with some symptoms. So I kind of took those two things together. I went, what is the pinnacle thing? And how do I fit that around the fact that I'm not necessarily going to know what my body's going to do day to day, week to week? So that's where I came to the conclusion of what have been my dreams since I was a kid, and it was music and film. And I just realized that I had to start learning the thing that I always wanted to learn as well, which was entrepreneurial skills and self-sovereignty financially, but also in terms of how you manage your career, how you build something from the ground up. And so that's what I started embarking upon, and that's what I hope I'll be able to continue doing for the rest of my life.
I mean, you know, some of our listeners are going to be, you know, in a different state of withdrawal. Maybe some of the people that are listening have gotten a lot better, but you know, I can imagine that some people are just too ill to currently, you know, take on a job. I think it has many like factors. It's like, where do you live? What is the culture? What is the social security system like? It's just, you know, it can be all these reasons. And for me, I think a mistake that I made, because I always own up to my mistakes, is I went in too soon to go back to work. I kind of like basically, I had seizures in January of 2023 and I went back a few months later. Just to be, because I was in panic, like, I need money, like, what the, you know, I need to do something. And I also wanted to try. I was like, maybe I can have a taper and have a job at the same time. And I just wanted to test it out. And I went on a whim. I just took a, you know, a risk, because I could have gotten seizures or could have gotten something severe at work, which luckily didn't happen. I just had a few shifts where I was cognitively declined. I was like, what's your name again? I've seen you like 50 times, but I forgot. I went in too fast. In the phase that I'm currently am at is like, okay, actually I want to get healthier first, work on my personal life and work on all the things that I was working on before I was sent in this horrendous withdrawal, which I did not anticipate at all. It was like, snap, your life is over or just different. So I think for me personally, the conclusion has become, resigning from work and doing all the self-healing, whatever that is, and also accepting that I have some cognitive decline, and that for me, my brain, luckily I've been sleeping better overall, but my brain still needs to process 7.5 years of poisoning, which is a long time. That means that I wasn't sleeping properly for at least 5 years, and now I'm tapering, you know, I've come down a whole lot. So I've just realized my brain has a lot of work to do, and that's okay. But it took me a long time to get to that point. And I think like what Emma Haynes said is, you know, rather working for a boss or not, wherever I'm going to work, there needs to be, they need to take into consideration that this is a nonlinear process.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what would you, recommend people? I mean, it's so different for everyone, but if someone is stabilizing or off their drug, and let's say they don't need to work, we have the luxury that they don't need to, but if they were be contemplating it, what kind of like tips or tricks or whatever, or from your own experience, what would you say to our listeners, Emma Saunders?
Well, I mean, I had come from a background of not having like really rich parents, even though I'm very posh and it sounds like I do. And so I was really, yeah, I haven't had that experience personally of I've had to either get help or I don't even know how I've survived these last 4 years of being kind of disabled, because you're disabled. I mean, I haven't had a partner either. So I meet people who have partners who can help them, obviously, or they have the luxury of maybe not having to work or whatever. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I've had obstacles literally come at me like this, and then I've just had to kind of deal with them.
Right, survive. Moment, you know, yeah,
it's almost like survival. It's like it's serious survival. It's like crisis all the time. I mean, initially it was like, right, how am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? How am I going to get a roof over my head? And doing that whilst you're also disabled, going through with like all of this is kind of crazy. But I would say to people that it is hugely challenging and it's totally normal if you haven't got, you know, support out there and you're all on your own. Like, I was pretty much there and I'm here. So, you know, I have my own family turn their back on me. You know, I really was my friends. So yeah, I had a few friends that actually kind of reached out. Like when I first stabilized, I had a girl say, "Hey, why don't you come live with me?" Which was like literally a godsend. And so it's been a few little nuggets that helped me along my way, but largely it's been like a torturous, hellish struggle. But you know, to be real, you know, but I'm here, and
Yes.
I'm
I
literally
think
like.
maybe it's a testament that, you know, we should be dead. We're not dead. But we survived all these obstacles and we're laughing and we're still.
I'm laughing. I'm here. I'm in Spain with my dad right now. Like he lives here, and at the moment, I'm trying to move here because I've got this lots of tapering ahead of me. I want to have a more peaceful life. I think that's a big thing that I would say to people is like try and find somewhere where it isn't so stimulating. And for example, London for me was too much. I couldn't be tapering and trying to survive there and pay the rent. And so at the moment, I'm like with my dad. I've had to take that decision. Of course, I want to be independent right now, and I want to be living in my own place, but I've had to do that. And I think a lot of people find that they have to lean on to their families, or yeah, and they're in this situation where they're just like living with their parents at like 40 years old because of this, you know.
Yeah, it
And just want to
happens.
say that that's okay, and that's, you know, if that's what you've got to do to get through it, that's what you've got to do.
How about you, Emma Haynes?
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's really important to say because I mean, definitely with my own journey, there were times when I felt a lot of shame. Like, and this was before I knew what happened and, you know, found the community. But you go through these periods of like, why am I not strong enough to deal with this? Why can't I just force? I mean, similar to you, Emma, like my family just sort of said, you know, Emma, doctors are saying you're fine. Why aren't you pushing yourself? And I'm like, I mean, it really hurt because I thought if you knew me as a person, you would know that I would pull out all the stops to push myself. And ironically, that's probably partly why we all ended up on these drugs, is we pushed ourselves so much through one respect or the other that we then had physical symptoms. For me, it was the virus, pushing myself through that. And here we are. Yeah, I think it is tough, and it's a really important question, and it's a really important part of this that I think is necessary to address. Because with me, I came out of the survival period to some degree of being in that situation where I was having like an ambulance a week for the first year, roughly, maybe 2 years, like, yeah, averaging an ambulance a week, and couldn't leave the flat for the best part of 5 years without these horrific symptoms. So you're kind of in that survival mode, but then what was kind of difficult is you then have the compound effect of you're in that survival mode, you're in that physical extreme survival mode. And then you start coming out of it. There's no fanfare. Like I say, you're just in the supermarket. Everyone's just like, should we get these eggs or these eggs? And you're having this profound moment of, I've just survived this like momentous thing. And then you find yourself in another survival mode, which is the survival mode of financial security, security in general. And that's even before you begin to deal with the trauma of what's happened. And you're still dealing with symptoms. It might not be as extreme as needing an ambulance a week, but it's still more extreme than not having it at all. And so I think that that's a lot to consider, and that's why I think it's really important, backing up what Emma said, to be compassionate with yourself, to be gentle, to find as best you can, find a situation that is calming. For me, that meant not living with other people. I mean, I did live with a partner for a while and we had a great relationship, and that was great. But in terms of house sharing or living with some family members, I couldn't do it. I had to get my own space and create my own sanctuary. From there, once you've got your kind of environment sorted, then you can start putting pieces together for the next steps of building the rest of your life, figuring out what steps you need to take to heal. And it can feel very slow, but it's not. You every single piece that you put together, whether it's just a page in a notebook, writing down your thoughts and ideas, that builds to something. And I'd say the last thing that I would say on this is you might as well go for what you really fucking want to do. Like, what is that fuck yes thing that you would do anything to achieve? Because anything at this point, and this is true for people that aren't going through bind as well, anything and everything is hard and carries risks. Everything. So even though it might seem a bit harder to go the extra mile to do that thing that everyone else is saying, oh, that's too risky, or I know that some members of my family thought I was delusional coming up with a film idea. And you just have to block that out and you go, you know what? This is my life, my body, my experience. I know the truth of it. And you just have to stay focused with that and let the right people gravitate towards you and bolster that. And everything else can fall by the wayside. So yeah, do what lights you up, because also there's power in that. There is a magnetic charge that when you go for what you feel deep within, that I swear has healing powers as well.
Yeah, and I think that I would say if you can create a cocoon, where you're safe, and whatever you need, and usually that is not too much stimuli. I think Benzo Tired, the podcast, this podcast really helped me a lot in kind of the thick of it. And currently, I'm writing my book, so I'm not taking notes. I'm actually writing a whole bona fide book in my native tongue, which is very therapeutic. So, that is one thing that you can do, like write stuff down or record yourself somehow. Like Emma Saunders is great with Instagram and doing these reels. And the second thing, and that this is actually quite easy, what I would recommend people is find your tribe within this benzo harmed community, because it's always super nice to talk to people that understand me, because no one else can really fundamentally understand what we're going through except us. So it's always nice to have that validation. If you said like, oh, I had three shifts, two went fine, one was fucked up, and I haven't slept in 3 days now, so that stuff. So it's really nice to that sense of community that really helps me in this kind of journey.
Yeah, that's such a good point, because like we're all here and we kind of like I feel like I know you guys like quite well, even though I've not met either of you physically. And it's really weird because you go through so much with people that you meet like online through this, because obviously we have to find help and we have to find each other online because doctors just are useless. And the fact that we're all here laughing about it, because for people listening to this, obviously I don't want to like make them think like, ha ha, this is funny. But I think when you come through it and you get to that place where you can laugh, it's almost like, yeah, it's nice to be able to do that with other people who get it, because it's not funny, but you're kind of laughing at the tragedy that you've all gone
Yes, it's
through.
cathartic, isn't it? It's a release. Like, yeah, I think honestly, I think it's part of the processing of it, and it's probably like a subconscious awareness that there's a safe space to be able to do that, where you feel you can be open about it and process the emotions around it as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, I'm gonna wrap for the episode. Thank you, ladies, both so much for being on my show again, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the episode. Be well, be safe. Remember, it's not a race, and don't forget to subscribe and rate the show.